to the Creative Pen Podcasts. I'm Joanna Penn, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options, internet sales and promotion for your book. The companion website is www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hi everyone, this is Joanna Penn for the Creative Pen Podcast, and today I'm interviewing Pip Ballantyne. Pip is an award-winning New Zealand author and podcaster. Her books include Chasing the Bard, Digital Magic and Weather Child. Welcome, Pip.
Morning.
Morning. Now, I've just finished Chasing the Bard and I'm incredibly enthusiastic about your writing, so thank you so much for coming on.
I'm always glad to hear people that are enthusiastic about the stuff I do.
Oh, no, it's great. So can you just tell us a little bit about you and your writing background?
Me and my writing background. Well, I've coined this new term for myself, which is the 12-year overnight success. I've been writing since I was very young, but then I sort of had a break when I was sort of in my mid-20s and doing other things that 20-year-olds do. And I came back to it sort of around 98, 97, sometime like that. I am a big science fiction and fantasy fan, thanks to my dad. He read me Lord of the Rings as a bedtime story, so I was indoctrinated early. But my writing style, well, when I picked up in 97 again, I started with Weaver's Web, which was e-published actually over in Australia with a company called Writers Exchange. And then I went on and got Chasing the Bard, published with Dragon Moon Press, and Digital Magic, which is also with Dragon Moon Press and is the sequel. And currently the high point of the career so far is that I just signed a 2-book deal with Ace Books, which is part of Berkeley, which is part of Penguin. So I'll have a book coming out next year called Geist.
No, and that's absolutely fantastic. I've been reading on your blog about that, and you know, sort of the sort of pre the deal, and then the deal actually happening.
Yeah.
Sounded very exciting.
It was all very, very exciting, but also very shocking. You know, you just sort of plod along, thinking, oh, okay, this is great. This is just the level I want to do, and then suddenly, when I got an agent, it sort of went up to another level entirely, and she got my book in front of people that I could only dream about, you know, editors whose names I actually knew. And when she said, I've had a nibble, I was just like, oh, I don't believe it. This isn't happening. Mm. And then, so when she said, well, actually, we've got a deal, I was, woo! I still don't think it's really sunk in. Once the editing and the marketing are all starting to kick in, then I think I'll really start to believe it.
No, that's amazing. And I guess, you know, maybe you can just explain how you managed to hang on for so long.
sheer bloody-mindedness, I think, really. You've got to have a tough skin, I guess. For me, I think one of the skills that has really managed to get me through all these years was being able to separate the writer from the person who's trying to get the book published. So I have it like a clerk. And that part of my brain is constantly sending stuff out, getting rejections. And I try and keep it separate from the writer who's doing the creative side of things. Because I think if the writer and the clerk started talking to each other, then the writer might have started to get a little bit depressed and creativity might have suffered. So, and just enjoying writing as well, you know, just not sort of seeing the long game, not knowing that it's not just about being published. For me, being published is fantastic, but the act of writing and creation itself is also very important to me. So yeah. I just keep going.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you also just won the Sir Julius Vogel Award.
Yes, I'm which holding is it.
Oh, wow. Wow, what does it look like?
There's a picture of it on my blog, but it's what would you call that? It's a sort of like a diamond shape. Oh. With all these arcane symbols. It's got Australia on it, actually, as well.
Oh,
wow.
There's a
picture of New Zealand, Australia and Antarctica. And it was actually designed by Weta Workshop, who did the special effects for Lord of the Rings. So it's very nice and very unexpected, but very happy to have one.
And can you just explain to everyone, so what did you win that for and what does that mean to you?
Well, the Julius Vogel is, they're a bunch of awards, a bit like the Hugos. They're nominated by fans and they're voted on by fans. And this is for Chasing the Bard, the podcast. And this is the first podcast that has ever been nominated for a Sir Julius by any New Zealand fans. So it was quite shocking. They had a little bit of issue about where to put a podcast because there aren't that many podcast novelists in New Zealand. In fact, I think there might only be me. So, so it ended up being a fan production. I'm a fan of myself. And to be honest, I knew that there were a lot of awards. I mean, a lot of listeners. Oh, I hope there are a lot of awards in America I can win. But there's also listeners. Most of my listeners and most of the feedback I get is from the States, of course. So to actually win it, I was kind of shocked. Well, I think what I said was, wow, I didn't know that New Zealanders listened to my podcast. Wow. So, no, it means a lot to me because, you know, it's from my from the people in my own country, which is nice for a change. I usually have to go overseas to get accolades.
Well, that, I guess that's another question I have. So like you said, you know, maybe you're the only one in New Zealand, and obviously, you know, I've lived in New Zealand too. It's quite small. There's not many people there. And
not many people.
No. And so how does being in New Zealand affect your career as an author, do you think?
Well, it was interesting. When I first started off, I tried to connect to New Zealand writers. And it's changed since then, but back then it was all very literary. You know, there is a group called PEN, who's the Authors Association here in New Zealand. But they were all very literary, you know, serious, you know, they didn't want any genre, you know, kind of looked down on the old science fiction and fantasy writers. Thankfully, thankfully it has actually started to change. There is more of a movement. I mean, the Sir Julius Vogel Awards for novels has got so big now that they're actually split it into a young adult and an adult novel, which up until about 3 years ago would have been unheard of. But being in New Zealand has, well, I tend to write for the outsider now. I don't, like the book I'm podcasting at the moment, Weather Child, is about New Zealand and set in an alternate history in New Zealand where New Zealanders are magicians. And there are a lot of things I find myself writing so that it's not like an in-joke. You don't have to be a New Zealander to understand it. I want to write so that Americans, for example, can understand what the concepts are and all of that sort of thing. But I do like to inject a bit of New Zealand culture into my writing whenever I can. Digital Magic is actually sort of half set in Wellington. So I think that being in New Zealand has given me a new appreciation of marketing, particularly. Mm. I've had to work a lot harder, you know, in social media and podcasting and yeah, getting on a plane occasionally and going over there and showing my face. So there are challenges to being so far away from the sort of the hub of the publishing world. But I also think it gives me advantages because you're, you know, you're exotic and you've got this funny accent and, you know, that draws people in. So it sort of balances itself out, I think.
Mm. And do you think, I mean, I know you feature on other people's podcasts as a voice talent. do you get picked because of your accent, do you think,
well,
sometimes?
The funny thing was that a couple of people said this to me. Dan Sawyer, who is a writer of Antithesis, had a character in it who was supposed to be British, and he wanted me to do it. So she suddenly turned into a New Zealander. And I think and T's got a character in his Pitcher's Pendant that's a New Zealander. And so I think I'm actually just growing on them and changing them subtly, you know. Eventually everyone will be speaking like me.
Yeah. No, that's fantastic. Now, I just want to talk. So last year you published Digital Magic and stormed up the Amazon charts with yours and T's Double Trouble promo tour.
Yes.
Can you explain, I guess, briefly, because obviously, you know, many authors would love to do that. How did you guys do that? And as a non-US author, can you make sales in the US, I guess?
Absolutely, you can make sales in the US. I think the success of Double Trouble was quite a bit of T and I playing off each other because we appeared in something like 17 podcast interviews. Oh, okay. T says it's 20. When you're just a single author going around, you know, to podcast, doing podcast interviews, it can sometimes get a little repetitive, especially if you're doing a promotion like Double Trouble. You know, you go on and you say, here's my book, here's the day I want you to buy it, aren't I fabulous? Mm. And then you're off. But with T and I don't think there was an interview that was ever the same because we were just having so much fun and riffing off each other. And I think it made actually quite a difference. And it was just a fun thing to do that was totally surprising in the fact that we managed to get it all four of our books, Pitcher's Pendant, Singing Sword, Chasing the Bard and Digital Magic, into the top 20, I think, of the fantasy charts on Amazon on that day. So absolutely you can make sales. And I think the whole new social media aspect of things just makes it so much easier for people that don't live in the States.
Mm. So that must make you guys millionaires then.
Oh, yes, we're rolling in it. We're rolling, and I'm driving around in my limo, and she's wearing gold-plated pants.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. So, I have heard a few of the podcasts from then. And actually, that's one thing I wanted to ask you about podcasting, I guess, because I've obviously been listening to things that you guys recorded last year, and you know, when I hadn't heard of you, and now I have heard of you. So, is that one of the great things about podcasting that people find you even years later?
Absolutely. I mean, when I was doing Chasing the Bard last year, you know, you're working 20 weeks straight hard out to get it going, and then you get to the end and you go, oh, that's done. And then you kind of forget about it, but it is still sitting there and people are still finding you all the time. And it's just a fabulous way for authors to have a presence online. And I'm not doing anything actively with Chasing the Bard now, but it's still out there. It's still doing business for me, if you want to call it that. And it's a great way to sort of lead on to other projects and get people interested, and you keep, it's like a snowball effect, I kind of think.
Yeah. And I mean, having listened to Chasing the Bard, there's you've got great music in there, and you know, lots of different voices. So can you give some tips for authors on doing their own podcast?
Well, there are several that I've learnt from T. Morris. If you're doing a whole voice production, you know, like T's Singing Sword or Digital Chasing the Bard, then you really want to have a decent-sized buffer, at least 5 episodes, preferably more, in the can before you start releasing anything. Because, you know, things happen, you get sick, you know, you go on holiday. You just can't predict what will happen in your life that might suddenly cause an interruption, and people like to have a continuous stream of reliable content. If you start skipping weeks or, you know, having large portions of space where nothing happens, then you can lose listeners. So have some sort of buffer. And if you are going that whole guest voices production, which I really do like, because it just gives it extra depth, and it's fun. It's just fun to have other podcasters on. You really need to realize that that's going to, I don't know, I would say that was probably 4 or 5 times more effort than just reading it yourself. What Scott Sigler and J.C. Hutchins do is fabulous, but I really do like getting the guest voices in there, but I realize it just multiplies how much time you're going to spend on it. So consider your lifestyle and how much spare time every week you're going to have before you make that decision.
Mm. And how long would each episode take you to do, record and get all the guest stuff in?
Well, for example, I think We're the Child, which I'm doing now, is mostly just myself and T and a few other guest voices here and there. That would probably take me about 5 or 6 hours to do, which is pretty light. But then when you start getting Chasing the Bard with the sound effects and it's just the guest voices, they really do kill you, cutting them in and splicing them all together. Yeah, I would think that would be 20 hours plus to do all of that. And you've got to listen to it several times as well to make sure that you haven't missed anything, and all of that just adds to the time. But I try and cut that down as much as possible because I've got about an hour commute every day, so I actually take my laptop and do some rough editing on the bus. So,
wow. Yeah. And I imagine there are people listening just going, whoa, you know, why would you do that? So when you started podcasting, did you know you were going to get success from it, or did you just start, you know, with some idea?
It was just for me, just a starting, just, sorry, T's just making some stupid noise there. I just shut the door on him. When I started off, T got me started and said, you really need to podcast Weaver's Web. And I didn't think that I would enjoy it so much. And I think it's not only the audio quality stuff that I really enjoy, but also the community aspect of it. And just the ability to reach fans and have people come up to you and say, I really enjoyed your podcast. And, you know, I was at Dragon Con in 2007 and someone came up to me and said that. And I was just like, who? What? Yeah. I think being a writer is quite solitary quite often. And I just get so much joy out of being part of this community and being involved in other people's projects and getting them involved in mine. I don't know where you would get that sort of community in a writing. Writing groups, yes, but it's not quite the same.
That's really interesting because, and again, hearing your podcast in between the chapters of Chasing the Bard, and you guys have so much fun. You know, it makes
really
it,
do.
You do, really you do. And as a listener, it makes you feel a bit, you know, kind of jealous. Like, I want to be there too, you know. So did you know these people before you started podcasting, or did you get to know them during your podcasts?
Well, let me see. I knew T, and I knew he worked cheap, so i.e. free. I had met Patrick Holyfield at Dragon Con. I definitely hadn't met Chris Lester. So I only really knew these people through their own podcasts, through Twitter and those sort of things, and Skype. But I have just made some of the best friends since then. I mean, I've been over, Scott Ziegler picked me up from the airport my first trip. I've got to meet Chris Lester and Dan Sawyer and Patrick Holyfield, and they're all just like they seem on the podcast, which is which is really fantastic.
Yeah.
No.
So it has
a lot of happiness. A lot of friendships have sprung out of podcasting.
Mm. And do you think that I guess working with those people has boosted your own success? And do you recommend other people try and do the same?
Absolutely. I think getting involved in the community, it's all about participation. And you learn from other people, and there is a certain amount of cross promotion. You know, people hear about Chasing the Bard on Metamore City, or, you know, or vice versa. I would definitely reach out to people because we're not scary.
Yeah.
Well, you know, T. Morris, obviously, you know, he'll talk the hind leg off a donkey, but apart from that, we're not dangerous. And yeah, I would say get involved. If you get involved, you'll get so much more out of it.
Mm. No, that's fantastic. Now, I've got a kind of off topic question, I guess.
Go for it.
Chasing the Bard is now an iPhone app, and I downloaded it last night.
I did
to finish the book. I wanted to finish the book. And so I thought, right, I'm just going to download it and read the rest. And after getting through most of it on the podcast. And so why did you do an iPhone app?
Well, T. Morris is a big iPhone junkie, I guess you would say. It's just another avenue for people to have. As a producer of content, you want to make things easy for people to have and as many formats as you can possibly get. And I think people are moving towards having one device, you know, that they get everything through, like the iPhone. And it was just a nice way to do it, and it was cool.
Did it cost you a lot of money, can I ask?
No, it didn't cost any money. We it's a percentage share with the iPhone apps people and digital magic. Digital magic. Dragon Moon Press and myself. So it's a good thing to do, but I feel at the moment that we were talking about this earlier, that the iTunes store, the app store, is very crowded at the moment. And there are a lot of books. Somebody said 3,000 books or something coming out. And if you know it's there, then you can find it easily enough. But I think at the moment they're kind of getting lost in the sea of content. And hopefully iTunes will come around and maybe sort them out. It would be nice to see them in genre categories at least, or something like that.
Yeah, I agree with you. I wouldn't have known it was there until I read it on your website, I think, and then thought that was very cool.
Yeah.
Because I'm an iPhone junkie as well.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, but, I mean, I've got an iTouch and it looks just as great on there, so.
Yeah, exactly. And would you recommend authors look at doing that right now, or just leave it for now? It's not that great an idea.
It can't really hurt. I know that some of the app developers are not accepting books anymore because they're not selling as well. But if you can manage it without having to pay any money for it, then I would go for it. But yeah, I guess hopefully the technology will develop and maybe we'll get a bit more of a organization in there. As a librarian, kind of, it would be nice to have a bit more of a system.
Now, I've got one more question before we're out of time, and sure. I hope you're okay answering this one. But in listening to Chasing the Bard, there is one particularly steamy chapter.
Oh, yes.
And I wanted to ask you, because many authors struggle with writing those steamy chapters, you know, have you got any tips for those people who need to write the all-important sex scene?
Well, the funny thing was that in you won't find that scene in the iPhone app that you've got, because I wrote it afterwards. I wrote it specifically for the podcast, because I wrote the book quite a while ago now, and yeah, I was embarrassed to write that sort of thing. And so I started shutting the door. But then when I came back to podcasting, I thought, you know what, I kind of failed the characters at that point, because there's build up and build up, and I thought I owed it to them. And then, of course, I went off and started writing erotica a la carte as a good way of practicing, which is a podcast where people choose menu items and I go off and write a saucy speculative fiction story about it. So it's a slippery path, you know, start writing that sort of stuff, and before you know it, oh dear. I think you have to be fearless and you have to be true to the characters. And I think if you're writing a sex scene, then like any other scene, it has to move the plot or expose something about the characters. And I don't just mean physically, but you know, emotionally and all of that. And so it's just another way to expand on characterization, I would say. And it's just fun.
Yeah. And it was funny because, you know, I obviously listened to it, and it was in the spirit of the whole book. You know, I don't want people listening to think it was like a sex scene. It wasn't so much a sex scene as a scene that was sexual in the book, but it was just so well written. I did want to ask you about it because, it was great.
Didn't notice that there were about 5 years difference between chapter 12 and chapter 13.
No, I did think it was much shorter than the normal podcast length, but no, I didn't notice that at all. So, well done. Brilliant. So I guess we're out of time. So can you just tell people, where can they find out more about you and about your books, and obviously buy your books if they're interested?
Absolutely. Well, all my links to my podcasts and my books and a blog are all at pjballantine.com, which is pjballantine.com. I used to spell it, so I've got very quick at it.
Yeah. No, that's brilliant. Well, thanks ever so much for your time, Pip. That was really great.
Oh, it's been lovely talking with you.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You can get more information on writing, publishing options, sales and promotion for your book at www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with a double N. And you can also get your free How to Be an Author workbook at www.howtobeanauthor.com. See you next time.